Hey, this is Brandon McManus, Denver Broncos Super Bowl champion, and you listen to The Scoop on AlScoop.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to The Scoop. This is Season 6, Episode 14. I'm John DiCarlo, Sam Cohn, Sam Newman, Kyle Gauss back with me again. Guys, how were your Thanksgivings?
Why do I get last billing?
I knew you'd say something about that.
Is this kind of like when there's like a guest star on like an established sitcom and they go, and with Robert Downey Jr. and with Kyle Gauss?
Sure. That's exactly what it is. Whatever you want to be.
My Thanksgiving was incredibly stress-free. It was great. And we're on to Christmas. So as you can tell, John is blocking out the Christmas tree in his Zoom right now.
Not anymore.
Yeah, Christmas season is upon us.
Well, Kyle, I'm glad you're not the kind of person that goes to Christmas on November 1st and waits till after Thanksgiving. That's like my biggest pet peeve.
My wife, who's about 15 feet away from me right now, 100% does that. And
I think we talked about this.
We have the conversation every year. I go, you're disrespecting Thanksgiving. You're skipping over a major holiday to go to the next major holiday. And she loves Thanksgiving. She loves Christmas. So it is what it is.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Find out what it means to me. my Thanksgiving was okay. I mean, I've been doing the same thing for Thanksgiving every year my family's been doing the same thing since before I was born. I go see family in New York. There's like probably 25 plus people there. And I love my Thanksgiving plans. And I love the food. I have no part in any of the cooking, but I enjoy the company. I enjoy the food. But this year it was just me and my parents. My brother was not going to try to get on a plane and come home. So it was just like a regular meal with my parents. So it was nice. It was good to see my parents and it was good to eat a good meal, but it didn't really feel much like Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I would agree with that sentiment. It didn't really feel like Thanksgiving. We had a good time though. We had great food. I mean, there was terrible football on, but good food, got in a good nap. It's all really matters.
I saw a funny tweet that was like, the fact that we have to watch the Detroit Lions play every year on Thanksgiving is like if the NBA made the Knicks play on Christmas every year.
Oh, Jesus. Are you guys all done with, do you have any leftovers left or are you guys done with?
We're done.
I think I'm done. Yeah.
Yeah, nothing
left. I ate Chipotle last night, so I assume I'm done with Thanksgiving. Otherwise, that was a questionable decision on my part.
Well, we have a lot for you guys this week. Coming up later in the podcast, we have an interview with Temple freshman safety Alex Odom. We'll have that for you just in a minute here. A few mailbag questions to get into, some basketball. Again, the season was paused. Their latest pause happened between now and our last podcast, right?
Correct.
So, season is on pause until December 10th. Again, we have some more information for you down the line here when it comes to basketball. Talk some football recruiting as well with that first signing day coming up on December 16th. Sam, Carolina Sam, has everything you need to know right here. Obviously, things are as sick as we get of saying this. Things are kind of fluid, especially now with the state of college football, with teams in some cases signing fewer guys and taking more transfers. We'll keep our eye on that as well as Temple looks to manage its roster from this, you know, forgettable 1-6 season that was marred by injuries, of course, COVID, the Cincinnati game being canceled. Of course, we didn't talk about that just yet, but they're trying to reshape the roster with this 2021 recruiting class. And again, potentially a couple of transfers that might be on their way in. Sam, where do things stand now? Again, we have, you know, 2 weeks between now and December 16th, but you've talked to a lot of these guys. Can you give us a sense of where things stand right now with this recruiting class, who might be potentially some early enrollees and who you expect based on the guys you've talked to that might sign on the 16th?
Yeah. So seems like, I mean, from everybody I talked to, they're really, you know, set on this class. They feel like that this class is going to be special. I mean, it seems like they're all really close, so they're all ready to get pen to paper. I confirmed that. So National Signing Day, the early period on the 16th, as we alluded to, I confirmed that Justin Lynch, Antonio Barber, Jalen McMurray, Jinto, I'm going to butcher his last name.
Obadegwu.
Jaden Coffin, Jalen Satchel, Malik Cooper, Coleman Jeffcoat, Andrew Garwo, and Balance on the Kamara all plan to sign on December 16th. That's as of now. And then the early enrollees that we have right now, this is subject to changes, Antonio Barber, Jalen Satchell, and Coleman Jeffcoat. There still might be another one or two, but unsure about that. And then the four guys that we don't know of right now and up in the air as to whether they're going to sign during the early period or maybe later on is Jordan Lodato, Keyshawn Jones, Johnny Martin III, and Rakeem Cooper. Not to say that those guys won't sign on the 16th, but we just don't know yet. So could see a lot of guys putting pen to paper though on the 16th, which is good news for Temple.
And then again, of course, if you live locally in Philadelphia, if you're paying attention, St. Joe's Prep won another state championship. Looks like Temple's getting a pretty good player, Malik Cooper, who scored 3 touchdowns in that game. Punt return, right? Receiving touchdown. He threw a touchdown, right? Did I get that right?
Punt return, catch, and yeah, did he throw for one? Yeah, I think he threw for one.
Yeah. So
did it all, as they said.
Yes. So getting a good player out of St. Joe's Prep. Again, we'll keep our eye on things. The names that Sam mentioned, again, doesn't necessarily mean that Jordan Lodato, Keyshawn Jones, Johnny Martin, Rakeem Cooper won't sign. But again, with the way things are now, again, the majority of the guys typically do sign in December now, but they could elect to wait until February. Obviously we'll have more coverage for you this week, next week, keeping an eye on things as the class comes together. Again, I would keep your eye out for maybe a transfer or two as they look at how the roster plays out here. Something we'll talk about on the podcast today is, of course, you know, a lot of people are going to be curious as to, and we'll get into this in the mailbag as well, who's staying, who's coming back, whether it's the defensive line, the offensive line, the quarterback. You know, there's a lot of stuff up in the air. And I mean, Rod Carey made no secret about this. You know, I asked him about it in media availability earlier this week. I said, do you have a sense of who's staying, who's going? He said, I have a sense of it. And he said, in fairness to those guys, I want to, you know, if these guys are going to make announcements, I want to give them the opportunity to make those announcements. I don't want to kind of like take that from them. But he said, and again, I'm paraphrasing here. He said, you know, I did tell these guys, hey, you know, take the time you need, but you do have to let us know pretty soon. Be fair to us because we have to manage the roster here, figure out how many recruits are bringing in. So it'll be interesting to keep an eye on that. All right. Kind enough to join us on the scoop this week is Alex Odom, Temple freshman safety. Alex Odom just completed his freshman season. Alex, thanks for joining us today. I would ask you how you're doing. It's probably that answer could probably go in a million different directions considering the season that you guys had. What was it like? I mean, I guess you've had a few days to kind of reflect on it now. I would assume that being a true freshman's tough. You played right away. You had the chance to show what you could do. But what kind of a season was this like for you with everything being thrown in the mix? Being a true freshman, last game of the season's canceled. Preseason camp wasn't what you guys wanted it to be. With all this thrown into the mix, what would you tell fans and listeners what this season was like for you?
I mean, it's different for everybody. It's different for everyone in the world that's going on. But Coach Carey said it best, like, everything that's different, was different, but once you step on the field, it's still the game of football. Just everything that led up to it, from meetings, had to be in Zoom for a certain amount of time. We couldn't really have, like, a team bonding time, couldn't be in all one spot at the same time. It's only a certain amount of people out on the field at a certain point and during camp. But we all had positive attitudes, like very positive attitudes. People could have easily quit, had an I don't care mentality, but everyone tried their best to make sure everything was smooth as possible. But it was different for me just because it was college football. It's my first year ever playing. But everyone adjusted pretty fast. I adjusted pretty fast, but it wasn't ideal, but it was still a great experience.
Hey, Alex, you mentioned the preseason camp when obviously, you know, you guys were kind of limited for a long time. I think Carey referred to it as the longest preseason camp he's obviously ever had. What, as a true freshman, how was it trying to balance the transition to college football with also such weird circumstances where you're not really able to fully go out there and practice?
I would say for me, it kind of worked out in my favor in a good way because I had a lot of time to learn the playbook, learn the coaches, learn all the players. So it really wasn't I wouldn't say it really wasn't hard. It was just, since everything was so new to me, I was just taking everything in as like, oh, this is what college football is, just as in the football aspect of things. But it was challenging in certain ways, just trying to learn the playbook and learn how to adapt to the speed and strength of everybody. But it was a lot of positives that came out of it than a normal person would think.
Hey, Alex, the coaches started mentioning your name pretty early on as someone who might play right away. When did you start getting the indication that you could make, you know, an immediate impact? And what was it that you were doing, particularly in preseason camp, to get on their radar?
For me, as soon as we got there, we had a lifting with Coach Ort. It really wasn't nothing football skill-wise. But when we got there, I had a mentality like, if I can show, I can – bust my butt in the weight room and work hard during workouts, I can get their attention early somehow. So that's really what my thing to catch the coach's attention was my work ethic during lifting. When we do conditioning, I was always first, trying to be first, like throughout the whole time workout. So I feel like that's really what caught the coach's attention. And then once we started doing drills and having pads on, I was showing aggression, showing I didn't quit. I got knocked down a couple times, but got back up and still did what I had to do. So I feel like that's what caught the coach's attention.
So, Alex, you got your start playing on special teams right away in the opener at Navy. Then I believe you had your first defensive snaps at Tulane. Then eventually you started those last three games, UCF, SMU, and then against ECU. Can you talk about that progression and what got you there to eventually starting from, you know, starting on the opener on special teams and then finally into a starting role?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. The coach said it in the beginning, said if you want to play on this team, you have to be able to play special teams. So during practice, special teams, we went at it a lot. I got on to punt return, onside kick, kickoff return. So that showed that I can be out there and actually do something positive. Then I got my chance in the Tulane game, and that actually worked out. Like, it was literally like a dream. Second play I ever was in, I got a forced fumble. Knocked the ball out. So that was something that really caught the coach's attention. And then later throughout the game, I think I had like two or three more tackles. That was really good. So, and then what was it? SMU game came in, had a couple of good tackles. I think I had six or seven tackles that game. So it really showed, like, it was literally like just being patient, just waiting for my turn throughout the whole thing, just starting off on special teams, grinding it out through the end, then just waiting for when I got my chance, and when I did, I did something positive. So,
Alex, what was it like starting in a season like this? Because between the injuries, between just like what Temple lost to the NFL, I mean, I guess in a different season, you know, if Sean Bradley, you know, Sam Franklin, Chappelle Russell, if they would, you know, if they had one more year, they'd be playing in front of you. Benny Walls will be back. But between what they lost to graduation and what you guys lost to injuries, you're out there starting with all sorts of different lineups around you. We'll ask you about Amir Tyler in a second. I'm sure he's been a mentor to you, but what's it like starting in a season like this where everything is new and a lot of the personnel around you is new too?
That was something, like I said, throughout camp, like just getting to know everybody, like offense, defense, it didn't matter who it was. But I was just grateful just to be out there. Like, not too many people can say they started as a true freshman or even played as a true freshman or even traveled as a true freshman. So it was just a grateful experience for me. It was very humbling, like knowing that I have a lot more improvement in me to be good and be great. Just like you talk about all the other players, Sean Bradley and all them. Like, I remember watching them last year, like, man, I can't wait to be like them. Next thing you know, a year later, I'm on the same field they played on. So it was definitely a great experience.
Yeah, after the UCF game, you mentioned you were a little critical of yourself. You said you left some plays on the field, you missed some tackles. But looking back now that it's been a couple of weeks since then, what do you think the team was able to do so successfully to kind of hold a pretty prolific offense? I mean, I know 38 points doesn't sound like that great performance, but really, you guys really did hold them in check, all things considered. What, looking back, what were you able to kind of garner from that experience?
It's just that me knowing that I was a true freshman starting, I felt like I had like a lot of weight on my shoulders, a lot of eyes on me. So I was just being hard on myself. But it's definitely guys, we all flow to the ball. So if I miss a tackle, there's definitely someone else following up to be able to make a tackle. But we had a great game plan going into that game, knowing that they had a good quarterback, good wide receiving core, good running back. So we had a great game plan. And I say we had a great overall, like the back seven DBs, we played very well to hold the offense that at that time had the most yards in the country out of all the teams. So we held them to what we could do best. So it was a very good game for us.
Hey, Alex, in a given week, can you kind of give us and fans some insight into what meetings were like with your position coaches like Tyler Yelk and Jeff Knowles, your defensive coordinator? I know that you kind of alluded to them being on Zoom, but can you kind of give us a look into what that is?
They used it as best as they could. You can share your screen. They had their little their tools. They could draw up plays and draw up formations and all that just to help us have a visual, even though we're over the computer. But they did it as best as they could, and we got a great understanding from it to the meeting until the next day at practice to come there and know how to use that meeting into actual reality and on the field. So I think they adjusted pretty well to that because it helped me a lot just to make sure that I know what's going on and help me catch up before in camp. So it was something that was very helpful for me.
Yeah, and just a quick follow-up with all the injuries and with them playing so many true freshman newcomers, did they kind of scale back things scheme-wise? Because I believe it was before the UCF game that Dan Archibald kind of mentioned at one point that they kind of simplified things. So do they throw everything at you guys even in a year like this, or do they kind of like simplify things towards the end of this, down the stretch?
Yeah, towards the end, things became a little more simple, like our game plans and our schemes and all that. They definitely made it more simple so it wasn't too much commotion or miscommunication during the games. But early in the season, it was definitely a lot. We definitely had like a lot of schemes and things we wanted to do. But, you know, as injuries went on, less experienced people started to get on the field, as myself. So we had to simplify things best ways possible and still have an effective game plan. So it still kind of worked out for us.
You had mentioned kind of like looking back on the season a couple, but can you give us a play you were particularly proud of this season and maybe a play you're looking back like, hey, man, I really like to have that one back?
Play that I'm proud of. It was definitely the Tulane game with a forced fumble. That was a way like to start off like my defensive career, like coming second play of the game we ever playing and then knocking the forced fumble out. So that was definitely one of my proudest plays. Play I left, I'll say probably UCF game. They had a long, it was they were on the 70. I think it was like a 60 or 70. They had a pass and I was right there and I just missed the tackle and he ran it all the way down to like the 2 yard line. So that was definitely one of the plays that I had that I wish I could get back just to stop the momentum of that game.
Alex, wanted to ask you about the ECU game again, just probably maybe the weirdest and most, at least from the outside looking in, most weirdest and most difficult moments you guys have had to deal with. It almost became like a national story, starts circulating on Twitter. Hey, the Temple ECU game has been delayed because a player tested positive. And then what was it like for you guys going through that? Because I imagine you're sitting there and then when it comes time to playing, eventually Christian Braswell doesn't play, Kamir Brown doesn't play, Arnold's not playing, George Reed, Nate Wyatt, so many of these guys, with Braswell, Brown, Nate Wyatt, these are guys that are playing right around you in your area of the field, guys that you have to communicate with. Can you take us through what that was like for you guys? Because I imagine that had to be really difficult. And then it's like, okay, now go out there and play, guys. What was that like if you could take listeners through what that experience was like for you guys and how you worked through it?
It was definitely caught us all off guard. And it was definitely something that caught us off guard. But it was something we were used to at this point. Like, you're just prepared for anything, especially with all the COVID guidelines and all the things we went through with camp and then players getting contact traced. So it was something we weren't expecting it minutes before kickoff, but it was something that we knew it could happen at any moment. So people, like, stepped up to the plate. I know Jay Ware had to step up and play corner, and he played very well for a position he didn't play all season. So people stepped up. Like I said, we all had positive attitudes for any situation that ever came up to us. So we stepped up. It felt very weird, but we did what we had to do.
So a quick follow-up to that. I know Amir didn't play in that game, right? So he was out too, right? What's it like for you as a safety? Because your veteran guy is out there. Are you handling some of the calls? Like if you had to talk readers through or talk listeners through this, what's it like in that situation where, again, that many guys are out? Is Tyler pulling you aside? Is Jeff Knowles pulling you aside saying, okay, like this is what you have to do now. Forget that you're a true freshman. You got to handle this, this, and this. How much more responsibility did that throw on you in that game?
A lot more. Mm-hmm. A lot more than I thought it would be. But I knew in the beginning of the week Amir wasn't playing. So it was definitely like I tried to like knuckle down during practice to make sure I knew what I had to do and what the other safety had to do and just make sure I just trying to take that step further in my game and just knowing that I had more responsibility to do. But yeah, Coach Yelp, Coach Knowles was definitely giving the heads up. Like, you're the veteran safety now in a way. So I definitely had to step up to the plate and I tried. I did my best. I didn't mess up that much, but it was definitely something that was a challenge, a good challenge.
Hey Alex, during the preseason, Coach Carey mentioned, you know, Alex, Jalen Ware, Trey, Chauncey Moore, all competing for that field safety position. And you kind of just allude to it, where in the end, you all ended up playing, not necessarily the way you thought you were going to play. Chauncey ends up playing a lot of Bubo. Jalen Ware played cornerback. What was it, that competition kind of like? And what's the relationship in that room? Like, or not necessarily a room in 2020, but what inside that position group?
Oh, yeah, it was definitely, we were all cool with each other. It's nothing like we all had that mentality, like we're all going to push each other and make the best man win and then work from there. So it wasn't no hard feelings with nobody. It was just, you're just working. And Coach Yelk played a big role in that just because how he coaches. Like he'll let you know straight up what it is. Like if you're messing up, he'll let you know. If you're doing good, he'll let you know. So we all worked just to make sure we got better individually than just be the best man win. That's how it was.
Alex, I wanted to ask you about Amir Tyler. Like, what a guy like that means to you? Like, what's your relationship with? And you know, what are the lessons you kind of taken away from him? And anything you learned, you know, just being under him this year.
Yeah, he's a very straightforward guy. Doesn't sugarcoat nothing at all. He was definitely someone like I knew as soon as I got there, like that's the person I got to be around. If I want to be good in any type of way in this position, that's the guy I have to be around. He worked. He knew the playbook, like the back of his hand. He knew both positions. If I ever needed a question or if he saw I messed up with something, he would come to me and let me know, like, yo, this is what you did wrong. Do this better. Or if we're going over someone at practice, say, go home, watch film, watch certain things that receivers would do to, like, have a better understanding when you get to the game so you can play faster. So he was definitely someone I look up to a lot. And he's a great guy overall. And he's a funny dude. So we got along pretty well.
Alex, you've talked to us about it before back when you first committed, but can you talk to our listeners about why you committed Temple and what your recruitment process was like?
Oh yeah, most definitely. One main reason I committed was because it was close to home. I lived about 30, 45 minutes away. That was one of the big things, close to home. And then when I met the coaching staffs and all the players, it was just like, I'll be dumb if I didn't come here. Everyone is genuine, down-to-earth people, funny. Like, it just felt like a second home. And plus, the school is very diverse, too. Like, you learn every shape in life, basically. There's all different races, all different type of people around the campus. So it teaches you a lot, like just being there. But it wasn't everyone on campus, but it definitely teaches you a lot about life. So that's really why I committed there.
Alex, you talked a little bit about this at the beginning of our conversation here, but what's the mood of the team like right now? Because it's been, 14 years since Temple's had a one-win season. Again, we know that this season doesn't really compare, just because of COVID and all the other just stuff, things that you guys went through. How much of the off season now is kind of just keeping it together? And just, I know you guys are waiting on who's staying, who's coming back. Guys can use, it's an eligibility free year for everybody, but what, if you had to describe to listeners, what's the mood of the team like right now? I know it's, I'm sure you guys can't be happy with the one win, but again, there's so much that goes into it. What's it like in the program right now?
I'll just get better. That's literally what it is. You would think people would be pointing fingers, being negative about things. Everyone just wants to get better. Everyone went home right now to see their families and all that. But once we come back, it's back to normal. We have to get better in every single way and just try to move on from this and put this in the past. But I'm pretty sure everyone has a great positive attitude. So
one of the things we didn't ask you is, what was it like when you got the news that the Cincinnati game wasn't happening? Was it, were you guys ticked? Did you want to play? Or was that that human side of you that's like, you know what, it's just time to kind of flush this thing and move on? What went through your minds when you heard the news about the Cincy game being canceled?
Me personally, I wasn't that happy about it. I was just happy that I was playing. But our team been through the gauntlet, basically. So it was just like, okay, we just got to get better. Then you got to take this time to get back healthy, get all our players back, and just get ready for next season. Because we knew, we're not going to hide from the truth. Like, we knew Cincinnati was a good team, so we was going to have to be on our A game. We didn't have everybody playing. So it was definitely something that helped us and really gave us a true, how can I say, it's a true, like, what word I'm looking for? A true understanding, like, how things went, and it, we really needed each other throughout the whole season just because how things went with the COVID and all that stuff. So,
Alex, obviously you kind of stuck out as one of the guys that got an opportunity to play as a true freshman and made the most of it. Who else, whether it's on defense or on offense, are you kind of really optimistic about their future in the program, whether that's a Kobe Wilson or whether that's a Trey Blair or anybody on offense? Who's kind of stuck out to you as somebody that either goes against these guys or plays alongside these guys every day?
Yeah, you said Kobe, Trey, Muhima Cargo, Zay Baines, like all the – if you've seen how we practice, like, it's great. It's great to see. Like, it's a good future. That's all I really have to say. Like, we all can play. We're all showing that we can play, and it's a great potential for all of us. So I'll say just a freshman class in general, we all work. So it should be good things in the future.
Alex, we like to ask guys this. What's something that people maybe don't know about you? I'm sure you got covered a lot when you were in high school playing at Kingsway. You're probably used to answering some of the same types of football questions, but what's something that people don't know about you, whether it's on the field, off the field, something that you don't always get the chance to talk about, whether it's like a hobby you have, you know, favorite food, favorite restaurant, anything like that? What's something that people maybe don't know about you?
I'm a big dancer. I can dance. I can dance very well. I mean, if you're on a team, you know I can dance. I'm always dancing at practice and all that stuff. So
outside looking in, I'm a big dancer. You the best dancer on the team?
Oh, by far. Definitely.
Who's the second best dancer on the team?
Second best? I don't know. Linwood Crump is a very good dancer, surprisingly. He can dance. You'll be surprised. It's a lot of people that can really dance, but I'm definitely on the top.
Because I know where you are when you're home at Kingsway High School. There's not much around the 322 and cornfields and farm stands and stuff, but if you had to give people a good, like, food recommendation in South Jersey around there, like, what's your favorite place to eat at home when you're home in South Jersey, and then a favorite place to eat in Philly? I know you didn't get a chance to probably go out that much, probably a tough time to answer this question, but where do you like to eat when you're home? Where do you like to eat when you're in the city?
Back at home, there's a place called Dom's Tavern. It's like a wing place. Mm-hmm. They have the best wings ever. These wings called Fat Daddies. It sounds weird, but they're very, very, very good wings. And Philly, definitely City View Pizza. That's the best. So far, from what I can be able to do, the City View Pizza is the best.
We're going to tell you, do we get City View? No, we get Philly stuff for the basketball games. You got to... you got to get out in Philly more when the pandemic's over. There's some good pizza to be had out there. Alex, this was a lot of fun, man. We appreciate it. We know it's been a crazy season for you guys. Appreciate you spending some time with us today, and hopefully we'll get the chance to cover you in what will hopefully be a lot more normal spring ball season. So take care and stay healthy, and thanks for being with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Hi. So a big thank you to Alex Odom for joining us again. Played a lot of football in a what turned out to be a 7-game season for him. But what are your thoughts on the conversation, guys, other than we know that he believes he's the best dancer on the team and can play some football too?
Yeah, I mean, I think he came across as a very composed, poised 18, 19-year-old. I think he's one of the guys that I think he freely admitted that there were times that he struggled and there was plays that he would like to back, but he also forced a fumble in his first collegiate game of defense. I think he's one of the guys that if you want to put on your cherry tinted glasses and take a look at this as a what silver linings can you pull from the season, guys like Alex Odom are the silver linings you can pull from the season. I think he's a big part of their future. I'll be curious. He's a guy that's going to be curious next year where it's an eligibility for a year, which means guys that played this year, do you play them next year or do you redshirt them? Do you what are their roles going to end up being? Because they still have that redshirt year. So I thought it was a good interview. I think Alex Odom's a very, very nice kid.
Yeah. I mean, like what Kyle said, I thought it was a great interview. Also, like, you know, going to the point of just talking about recruiting, I mean, it gives you, he's one of those players that gives you a glimpse at Rod Carey's first recruiting, like first technical recruiting class. And I mean, for him to play the level that he did as a true freshman is kind of, I mean, you have to just kind of, you know, tip your cap at obviously there's missed tackles plays that you want to have back, but he was thrown into the fire, like literally thrown into the fire in that Tulane game. And he came out on the other end making, you know, recording a lot of tackles. So there's definitely a lot to build on with that kid. And he seems to be the future of this part of the future of this program.
Beyond the fact that he's a great dancer. One thing I did like that he said is he has a very good mentality for like 17, 18 year old freshman coming into a college program and making that transition. Because we asked him about like, what was the difficulties of coming in a weird year like 2020 and having to deal with making that transition on top of having a very shortened spring ball, not much practice time leading up to the season, having to deal with all the restrictions. And he was kind of like, I just put my head down and do what I can, take the time to learn as much as I can, be around the guys that I know I need to be around if I want to be better. And like, has a really good mentality. He had said one thing that I liked a lot, but he said when they were like, they weren't able to get on the field right away, but they were able to get in the weight room. And he's like, if I can show that I can work my butt off in the weight room, that'll lead to the next thing. And if I can work my butt off there, that'll lead to the next thing. And that's such a great mentality to have when you're again, a freshman and making that transition to a college program to try to be somebody and make a name for yourself.
All right. And speaking,
I mean, he's kind of the prototypical Temple recruit, right? I mean, when we asked him, who are kind of the guys that you're optimistic about in the future, guys like Kobe Wilson or Trey Blair or Zay Baines, more highly recruited guys, at least on paper, stuck out to him. But Alex is the type of kid that Temple's had a lot of success with. You get a South Jersey kid in that checks all the boxes character-wise and athleticism-wise, and you develop him into a player. He played quarterback, played running back, played wide receiver in high school, and now you're turning him into a guy that started as a true freshman at safety. So good story, and one that sets up well for the next 4 years.
And speaking of the future of the program, Temple did kind of circling things back to recruiting again, which we talked about. Jalen Martin commits, a class of 2021 3-star safety from Chamberlain High School in Tampa, Florida. Sam, what do we know about him so far?
Well, I'm going to speak to him later tonight, so make sure that you check out our front page whenever we get this posted. But he's a guy who was previously committed to Oregon State, had offers from UCF, USF, Washington State, Iowa State, and Kansas. So, I mean, if you're one of the fans who likes to look at offers, like this is a good get for Temple. You know, he's a guy that they can put in that secondary and obviously replace in their class, a player that they lost today, and Malachi Lowry, the 2-star safety from Auburndale High School in Auburndale, Florida. He joins Christian Abraham and Nick Mitchell as the third decommit from this class, which is expected, you know, in the age of COVID. But yeah, I mean, from all things that we've heard, it's a guy like Jalen Martin's a real good get from Temple. It's not, you know, your typical, you know, you like Alex Odom type of kid from Kingsway under recruited. This is a guy who was heavily recruited. And I mean, for them to land him at this period is a good get.
Just another, I don't want to say a minor note, but roster, when it comes to roster movement, with more roster attrition on the way, I'm sure, which happens with every year. Will Mobley has entered the transfer portal as a grad transfer. So he had made, again, 99 of 105 extra point attempts, 26 of 35 field goals. Did finish his Temple career 10th all time on the scoring list with 177 career points. Will, obviously the thing with Will was leg strength. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. Again, Rory Bell eventually came in and won the started kicking job, struggled a little bit in terms of keeping some of his kickoffs inbounds. Wouldn't be totally surprised again if Temple looks at the transfer portal to try to maybe bring in a kicker to compete with them. To compete with Rory Bell. So there could be a kicking competition there. We'll have to see. But, and again, you know, in any normal, whatever the hell normal is anymore, you know, I think, you know, you'd see some roster attrition. You're always going to see that from year to year. I think you'll see, again, I think it's just the way college football is now, as we talked about earlier. I think you're just going to see more transfers. Everybody's taking advantage of it. So, you know, with Will Mobley going on, could see maybe another kicker coming in to compete with Rory Bell. Back to the world of college basketball. Temple still has yet to play a game this season after another positive test forced them to pause their season again. So it looks like there will be no Big Five basketball this year for the Owls. The season's on pause until at least December 10th. What looks like it could be back on the schedule is we're told that it could be likely that Temple will end up playing NJIT on December 19th. That's not confirmed yet. It's looking likely, according to a source I talked to. Yet, for all I know, by the time this podcast drops, maybe it will be official. Other than that, they're going to be playing their conference opener against a very good Houston team. So, I mean, I guess if you're a Temple, you're hoping that you at least get one tune-up game, one game before you play a very good Houston team. Caleb Battle, I guess we hadn't talked the last time we recorded. Caleb Battle hadn't had his waiver approved. And I guess, you know, you get maybe Caleb Battle and Brendan Barry for that if they end up playing NJIT. Real quick, before we get over the mailbag, what do you guys expect to see if they do play that NJIT game on December 19th? We've talked about all the newness and all this stuff. And there's a mailbag question about it too later on, but you know, who's going to be the leading scorer, but what can you reasonably expect if that season opener is December 19th against NJIT? What, any sort of gut feelings on what you might see from these guys?
I mean, I'm not going to sit here and blow smoke and tell you that I've been analyzing NJIT's roster. NJIT's, when I think of that, I remember in like the mid 2000s, they went like 0-32 one year. So that's kind of what I think of when I think of NJIT. But you would think just where they are as programs and the type of kids that they're recruiting, that should be a game that Temple wins regardless of the circumstances coming into it. I think assuming that they end up playing NJIT, which has not been official yet as of 5:37 on December 2nd, if that ends up being the case, that's a smart move. Because I think Houston is one of, if not the best team in the conference. And if you all of a sudden had to go and play them a week later without any warm-up before that, that would be painful. So it'll be interesting to see how Brendan Barry kind of acclimates to the offense and the system with minimal practice time before that.
Yeah, I was gonna say the same thing. I mean, Houston is one of the best teams both in the conference, and I believe they're still ranked in the country. They just beat Texas Tech for the night by like 10 or 11. So Houston is a very good team. If you can get that NJIT game under your belt, that's at least something. I mean, the biggest thing you're gonna get with this team is A, first game jitters, just because they have a lot of freshmen, a lot of underclassmen, and a lot of guys transferring in that haven't played in a Temple uniform under Aaron McKee or under in this program at all. Kyle found that great stat about the backcourt returning 18 minutes of gameplay. And
all
the
Damian Dunn.
Like, it was like 3,000. All Damian Dunn. So you have an entirely new backcourt, and a lot of your team is brand new to the program. So to get an NJIT game, no matter what it looks like, the first game is going to be pretty sloppy out of the gate, is my assumption. They're going to turn the ball over. They're going to make mistakes. But I think you could reasonably expect an Aaron McKee-led team is going to come out with a fire lit under their behinds. I think they're going to come out with a chip on their shoulder. I think they're going to want to play hard. I think these kids are, more so than anything, I think they're excited to play basketball because of the weight they've had to go through. But to go into Houston, your first game would be, as Kyle said, pretty ugly. So to get that NJIT game under your belt, just to get that first game out of the way, just to kind of cleanse yourself of the first game of the season, I think would be huge for them. And then Houston is what it is, and you get into conference play.
Let's go to the mailbag, where we have a few questions from a few of our readers, big multi-part questions here. First one from 82 Al from the message board. Question is, discuss the QB situation. What was your impression of the talent? What does next year look like? Does Russo come back? What were the injuries? What were the injuries? I mean, we know that Anthony Russo had the AC joint injury in his right throwing shoulder, was set to come back, you know, went into the team's COVID protocol, didn't get a chance to play the rest of the year. Like Rod Carey said earlier this week, would he have come back for the Cincinnati game had it been played? We don't know. Does Anthony Russo come back? We don't know for sure just yet. Obviously, I think that, and again, guys, feel free to chime in here. And we've talked about this earlier this year, you know, obviously, you know, readers, fans, you know, with just cause, you know, complain about the interceptions, but you see what the drop-off was. You see what the drop-off is between Anthony Russo and Trad Beatty. And in fairness to these guys, they haven't played as much college football. The drop-off between Russo and Trad Beatty and Real Mitchell. We never got to see Matt Duncan. Rod Carey did say, in case you guys missed it, Matt Duncan has been reinstated, so he's no longer suspended. Barring anything unforeseen, he'll be back next year. Might be a part of the quarterback picture if Russo doesn't come back. But you know, I don't know. What was your impression of the talent, guys? What did you think of what you saw? Now that things are all said and done between Real Mitchell, we didn't see Duncan. What do you make of this?
Massive drop off, I would say. I mean, I think Trad Beatty didn't necessarily get a fair shake. He basically got a couple drives and one opening half before he was out for the rest of the year with what appeared to be a head injury or concussion like issues. I think regardless of whether Anthony Russo comes back, which it does seem like it's legitimately a coin flip at this point, I think you have to bring talent into this program at that point. I think you're going to see the staff either look for JUCO or look for transfer quarterbacks, because there was a pretty big drop off. There were still plenty of weapons on offense. The offensive line was all still there. Wide receivers were all still there, and they just were not able to produce.
Next question here comes from 215 Temple Tough. This is a four-part question. I know access was very limited to players this year, but did you get any type of sense of the players' mood surrounding the program? Do you guys still seem to be on board with the coaching staff? You know, fair question in terms of, like, you know, we're not there after games. You know, sometimes you can, every once in a while in the past, you can see, you know, if guys are having a heated conversation coming out of the locker room or something like that. We didn't see any of that this year. I mean, again, guys, chime in on this as well. I mean, I have
breaking news.
What is that?
Temple has added the commitment of UConn transfer cornerback Keyshawn Paul, who just announced on Twitter. We kind of heard this might be in the works a little bit, hearing from people. And this is a guy that obviously they didn't play at all this year. UConn just sat out the 2020 season, which in hindsight might not have been the worst decision in the world. But yeah, Keyshawn Paul started all 12 games at cornerback in 2019 for the Huskies and is now on his way to Temple. Sam, I think you actually had something on him statistically earlier, right?
Yeah, let me pull that up real quick. So Keyshawn Paul, among returning corners last year, so going into this season, had the second lowest completion percentage allowed in press coverage. Above him was Asante Samuel Jr. at 12%, and I mean, that's probably going to be a first round pick right there.
Right.
We know who his father is. And Keyshawn Paul was, you know, far away as second, but still only allowed 24% completion percentage in press coverage. So they're getting, you know, that physical mold of a corner right there. And I mean, in all honesty, they need help at that position.
Yeah. And the addition of a guy who obviously can play at the American Athletic Conference level, considering he started 12 games for an AAC team in 2019. So seems like a pretty solid get, a multi-year guy too, I think. I think he should have 2 years of eligibility left for them.
Interesting. So, yeah, I mean, we're literally just saying that they could look to add some guys in the transfer portal. I think that's where college football is now.
That's not the second corner they've added through the transfer portal. They added Antoine Walker from Northern Illinois transfer. So that's two now, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And again, getting back to this question, I mean, this might sound like an overly simplified answer, but I think that you're going to see a lot of guys who are really ticked off, who want to erase a 1-6 season, and they're really eager to get back and show what they can do. And guys that don't you know, that, like, is it likely that Brandon Mack is going to go on to the NFL? Probably. Anybody who doesn't come back, they either want to leave as a transfer or they're, you know, there's going to be another circumstance there. But I think that a lot of guys are still bought in on the program. I'm sure nobody's happy with a 1-6 season. I'm sure nobody's happy with how things went down, with having the injuries they had, having as many guys go into the COVID protocol late in the season. But I would think that the majority of the guys are still on board with the coaching staff. I don't think there are any widespread issues there. Second question here. Do you think Rod Carey will take a hard look at his coaching staff this offseason and make tough decisions on coaches who've been with him for a while and make changes? I don't think so. I think we've kind of talked about this before. I'm curious to hear what you guys think. I think Rod Carey would be hard pressed. I understand every single offensive coordinator that has come through over the past 10 years gets scrutinized, from Matt Rhule to Scott Leffler to George DeLeon, all these guys. It's a thing to do. I get that. But I do think, whether fans like this or not, you know, I'd be hard pressed to think that Rod Carey would go to Mike Yuremovich and say, "Hey, Mike, not liking what I'm seeing, I got to move on from you." Again, it's not to say that the offense can't improve, that the play calling can't improve, but I just think Rod would be in a really tough position to do it after this year, where things are so unconventional, you know, where Mike Yuremovich is playing Kamal Gray in what turned out to be the last game of the season. I don't see any changes that Rod forces. Are they always going to have to fight to keep some guys potentially? But I don't think he's going to be in the mood to make too many changes here. But again, I'd be curious to hear what you guys think of this.
Yeah, I would just, this is something we've talked about on previous podcasts. And John, I think you summed it up well, that this year of all years is not really a fair year to judge coaching or to judge the position teams have been put in. So I think to say that you want to have a mix up in the coaching staff, to say that there should be a change in the coaching staff after a season like this is a bit unfair and a bit of a stretch.
Question. Oh, Kyle, do you want to chime in on this?
No.
Question number 3 from 215 Temple Top. Russo seemed unhappy with not being fully cleared to play at the end of the year. Will this have any effect on him wanting to return for a 2021 season? I mean, only Anthony Russo knows the answer to that. I mean, was he not happy with not coming back? Look, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, in his situation, I'm sure he was incredibly frustrated. We haven't had the chance to talk to him about this, but he misses a couple games with the AC joint injury in his right throwing shoulder. From what I could tell, he was probably set to come back against UCF, goes into COVID protocol. I'm sure he's upset. I'm sure he's ticked. And it's a tough thing that these guys had to go through. Will that affect him coming back for the 2021 season? Again, we'll see. He hasn't announced anything. The program hasn't announced anything. I think that Anthony would know what he has coming back. I think that he would have the chance to galvanize a couple of things if he comes back. I think anybody on offense who's maybe on the fence would probably be more inclined to come back. If Russo comes back, we'll see. If he doesn't come back, then it's looking at Matt Duncan, looking at Trad Betty. I think that the staff still likes Mario Valenti. We'll see. It's not a name that most people think of. They love Justin Lynch, but he's young. In a perfect world, you want to redshirt him. I think he would still be 17 by the time he
gets. He's gonna be 17. I was still wearing hemp belts when I was 17.
You're still wearing what?
Hemp belts when I was 17. I can't imagine being a starting Division I quarterback when I was 17.
Question number 4: any names to throw out that you might be hearing for the AD search, or if there have been any updated timelines on when they want to hire? To be made by a lot of stuff getting thrown around on that. Nothing official. One of our readers posted something on our message board with some unconfirmed information out there saying that the Temple could be waiting until they hire their new president. We don't know for sure. We've mentioned some names before. I think that when they do get around to hiring somebody, I think they'll get some, I think you'll see some names. You know, Ryan Bamford at UMass is a name that gets thrown out there, but it's almost kind of too early to speculate, because I don't think the hire is going to be happening anytime soon. Again, there's nothing official on that. The timeline's going to be interesting, but I don't think it's going to be anything that happens anytime soon. All right, so two last mailbag questions to get to here. One from a two-parter from Temple J from the message board, and another one from what TU. These are both screen names from our message boards, both basketball related. From Temple J, two-parter. Now that Battle, Caliph Battle, has been cleared or has cleared NCAA purgatory, meaning he's his transfer waiver from Butler has been approved. What is the Temple starting five? This is an interesting one because we might have answered this question differently a couple of weeks ago. What do you guys think of this one now?
Yeah, if you'd asked me 2-3 weeks ago, I would have been pretty confident that you would have seen something resembling Jeremiah Williams starting as a freshman at point guard, and somebody like Damian Dunn, Jay Perry, and J.P. Mormon, I think, are locks to start, and then Jake Forrester start. With I think the thing that gets interesting here is not just Battle and Brendan Barry, is also what's the health of Ty Strickland at this point.
Yeah.
Now that you've bought yourself a couple more weeks, what is that impact? I still think you'll see something pretty close to that initial lineup just to start with, because I don't think it's reasonable to expect Brendan Barry to come in and just all of a sudden start, especially with he might just be in the beginning just kind of a weapon off the bench. So I think you'll see something similar to that Jeremiah Williams, Dunn, Perry, Mormon, Forrester. It wouldn't surprise me if they do shove Caliph in there and then maybe you move Dunn, play him a little more on the ball or kind of just do like a joint effort. But I would think Jeremiah Williams at this point is your closest thing to your 2-point guard.
I would agree, because I think the addition of Caliph is awesome, and I think that he'd likely be the first guy off the bench, assuming Ty's unable to play their first game. But when you look at the three between Jeremiah, Damian, and Caliph, Jeremiah's got the most experience with the ball in his hands and taking control of an offense. He's a 6'5 big guard. I think that's the guy you want at the one. But at the same time, Aaron McKeith talks so much about building combo guards and building guys who can do it all. But I think opening day, I think that's probably what you're looking at. I'd agree with Kyle that it's probably going to be Jeremiah and Damian, and then you'll probably bring Caleb first off the bench, assuming Ty is not healthy right away.
Sam, what do you think? Carolina Sam.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you guys on that. I think even if Perry is acclimated, like can get up to speed with the offense at the same time, he also hasn't played college basketball in over a year. And then some of that Caleb Battle, yeah, he's a new addition. And I think he's a sharpshooter you can bring off the bench. So I think playing it safe, you probably want to just stick with Jeremiah, your three most tenured players in Dre, JP, and Jake Forrester. And then somebody like Damian Dunn, who you can hope lives up to the hype that everybody surrounded him, and then you can have your shooters come off the bench like Battle, Quincy Adamacoya, and Brendan Barry.
Yeah, just to pile onto what Sam was saying, I forgot to mention Brendan Barry, but Sam does make a good point that Brendan Barry hasn't played a live game of college basketball in over a year. I would very much expect him, if he's kind of in the flow of things, if Aaron McKee feels like he can get him out on the floor, I'd very much expect him to see the floor, whether the first game is NJIT or Houston, but I would assume it would take at least 2, maybe 3 games before he comes into a real meaningful role, just to kind of get his legs back under him, get the feel of being back into a college basketball game, getting a feel for playing basketball in the American, because it's tough to just throw him into meaningful minutes in a serious role after kind of what he's been through the last year and a half. So I very much see him playing. I very much see him as the kind of guy that could work his way into a serious role, but off the jump, game 1-2, I don't see him finding his way into a starting or 6-man, maybe even 7-man role.
Yeah, I think I as of now, I think mine would be unchanged. Jeremiah Williams at the point, Damian Dunn, JP Mormon, Dre Perry, Jake Forrester. I think the most interesting thing will be, whether or not Ty's ready, as Kyle said. Now, if Aaron McKee, the last couple of times we've had the chance to talk to him when there's been media availability, said he's getting closer. I think Aaron, again, most coaches are, but I think Aaron's really cautious with things. The indication that we've gotten is that Ty's practiced, but he hasn't been up for a contact yet. Will these 3 extra weeks make a big difference for him? Maybe. I think that would be the one area where you'd see a change. I think if Ty's ready, I think Ty gets the start over Jeremiah Williams. We just don't know yet. But now, again, I still think they're, with everything that's been going on with such a new roster, maybe they're a 500 team at best. But having Brendan Barry come off the bench, having Caleb Battle come off the bench, I mean, they're Brendan Barry's a proven shooter. Caleb Battle was a proven shooter in high school, showed some flashes at Butler, but that's a big addition for them. Now the roster looks a little bit more interesting for him, but that would be my best guess of starting five. Second part, we kind of already mentioned this or talked about a little bit. When can Barry step on the floor for Temple? I think we mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. The indication that we've gotten is that he can play once he graduates, once he completes his undergraduate coursework from Dartmouth. So now, again, with the season being pushed back, again, all things seem to be pointing in that direction that he could probably play against NJIT. I guess things have to be officially formalized there, but should be able to play this month.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Dartmouth's academic calendar ends on Thursday. I'm sorry, on Friday. On Friday, so you would think that there's a chance.
Yeah, the 4th was the date that I was handed. So, and when you think about that, they're so get out of quarantine. What, the 10th? I mean, it should line up for him to be able to get on the floor in practice with them once they return.
Hmm. Last question to finish things out here from what TU. Sounds simple, but I think it's really interesting this year. Who do you think our leading scorer will be this season?
I want to go last.
I want to go second to last.
I'll take this one. Well, just kind of shot in the dark. I think
do you see the look, by the way, do you see the look on Sam Cohn's face? He said, I'll go first. Sam looks so despondent right now. He's so anxious to talk.
I want to go first instead, Sam.
No, I don't want to go first. I think it's a hard question, but I do have an answer. So go ahead.
I'll go quick and let Sam have his long answer here. I think Dre Perry, I just think he's probably your most established shooter already that's, you know, has experience within the program. And he saw the clip he could shoot from behind the arc before he got his injury. His season became riddled with injuries. And then maybe he could be that scorer that he was in high school. It kind of alluded to in my preview. That's a great plug there. Check out our 5-part preview that's still on the website. We'll probably plug that again when the season gets back in the flow of things. But I think just your most experienced guy in the front court with the ball in his hands. And he said in media availability that he could be a guy that brings the ball up the court. So that's just those two things for me.
I'm going to preface my answer by saying this time last year, we were sitting in John's office having a very similar discussion. And my pick for most improved player was Justin Hamilton. So take my answer with take this answer, what you will. Here's what I'll say. I don't think it's going to be like a runaway leading scorer. Runaway, I use that term lightly, like we saw this past year with Quentin Rose. If to plug again our 5-part preview, if you check out the video I put together in part one of our preview about looking at the new roster and the roster attrition for this season, looking at last year compared to this year, it is an entirely new team, and Temple is losing its leader in every major statistical category, that being points, assists, rebounds, 3-point shooters in terms of like shooting more than, I think it's like 65 3-pointers throughout the season. Alani Moore led the team in 3-point percentage, shooting more than that. I think he shot like around 200. So you're losing a lot of production. With that being said, I think what you're getting in this new team is a lot of young guys that don't have a lot of experience, and you're going to see a lot of guys sharing the ball and a lot more movement. And what's the word I'm thinking of? You're going to see a lot more free flowing of an offense, and you're going to see a lot more spread out scoring. With that being said, I think my pick for who the leading scorer will be for Temple this year, I'm going to go with
Justin Hamilton.
I think it's going to be Damian Dunn. I think Ty Strickland's going to miss the first couple games. I probably would have gone Ty if he was healthy the full season, but I think Ty's going to miss the first couple games and he's going to slowly come back. He's not going to be like a starter the first game he comes back. I think he's going to be weaned back in the starting lineup. I really like Jeremiah Williams. I think he's probably one of the people I'm most excited to see play this year, either him or Quincy, but I think Damian Dunn is going to be who we think he is. I think he's going to be the kind of guy who can create for himself. I think they're going to look to him a lot on the offensive end of the floor. And I think he's going to be the guy that's, if he can put the ball in the hoop and if he can shoot the ball with some kind of consistency, I think he can be the kind of guy that can put up 12, 15 points a night.
Yeah. Damian was going to be my best guess too. And again, it's all, as you mentioned, it's all, well, I don't want to say it's all crapshoot, but again, everything's all new here. I just have a gut feeling that he's going to be, and as their leading scorer, I think he might be their leading scorer at like 11 points a game. Or something like that. I don't think it's going to be anything crazy. I think everybody's really intrigued by what Caleb Battle can do. He really looks like he can shoot the ball. He's athletic. Again, we've talked before about he's maybe not a guy that's going to be super comfortable off the bounce or like having the ball in his hands a ton. He's maybe better coming off screens. I know that's something he's working on. I think he's a guy that maybe starts to really pick things up a few games into the season. However consistent their season is going to be, hopefully they'll have more consistent stretches other than these stops and starts and everything like that. We know how difficult it's going to be to get the season in, but something tells me that Damian Dunn's going to be their leading scorer and that maybe Caleb Battle becomes that guy that can maybe average double figures once he starts really kind of finding his spot. I can't, Yeah, even just without COVID, even if we weren't dealing with COVID, I mean, it's just such a, it's been a really unique offseason to cover. I can't remember the last time things were kind of this up in the air where, you know, it's, you have to think that hard to think who's their leading scorer going to be this season. I'm sure if we thought hard enough, we could think of maybe something sort of similar, but yeah, my best guess would be Damian Dunn. Kyle, what do you think?
Yeah, I'll kind of echo things. I won't say done just because I don't want to have three of the four be done. I agree. I think it's going to be a lot more spread out. It was a complete roster overhaul. Like you said, regardless of COVID, they completely tore this thing down to the studs, and you're bringing in 8-9 different guys that just have not played at Temple at this point. I think you'll see a bunch of guys that average. Last year, it was Quinn Rose and Nate Pierre. We were the only people that were consistently scoring double digits. You would get a random game with Monty Scott producing, or Jake Forrester would go 8 of 9, but it was never consistent. I think this year you'll see 4, 5, 6 guys kind of in that 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 points a game range. I'll just go with Califf. I think that eventually as this gets further in, that'll end up developing more and more of a role. I think Damian Dunn's the guy that is the Damian Dunn's the unknown that I'm most confident is going to have a very similar role the entire year. Like, I think he's going to start off as a starter playing a lot of minutes. I think he's going to end the year as playing a lot of minutes. Battle, I think, might be coming off the bench initially and may eventually work his way into the starting lineup. And I think in the end, he might end up being that guy. But like everyone's been saying, that might be 11.5, 12 points a game.
Can I add one thing about
Caleb? Now that we're all in agreement with that, somebody's going to average 22 points a game. Like, someone's just going to, like dominate.
Without a doubt. Justin Hamilton. One thing about Caleb that I'll add, and I think he can be a scorer. His time at Butler, predominantly his role and his success, again, it was at Butler, he played pretty sparingly, but his predominant role at Butler and his predominant success was as a catch and shoot guy, as a guy that's going to, as John mentioned, going to come off pin downs, going to come off screens, and a guy that's going to catch it and let it fly, or a guy that's going to spot up in the corner, they're going to find him on a driving kick or whatever. So I'm curious to see if Caleb Battle expands his game in a role or in an offense that kind of allows him to, because I think at Butler, again, playing sparingly, he wasn't the guy they were looking to. He wasn't a 1-2-3 option in terms of scoring the ball or having the ball in his hands. So I'm curious to see what he looks like when he has the ball in his hands more, or if he kind of floats back into that role of a guy that's going to come off pin downs, going to come off screens, and just stay in that kind of spot up or catch and shoot kind of role.
I wouldn't feel bad about the Justin Hamilton take. Kyle, what was my worst sports take of all time?
Oh, you've had a lot, but I assume that you're referencing Danny. I assume you're referencing Danny Watkins.
Yeah.
You're pretty adamant that the 27-year-old Canadian firefighter that they drafted was going to be a sure thing.
what draft was that? They drafted him out of Baylor, right?
Did you just ask me what year 2012 was?
No, I didn't hear you say 2012. I'm not.
I don't even know. It might be 2011, something around that. It was the Jaquan year, I think. So that would have been 2011, right?
Yeah. I remember telling Kyle, I was like, no, yeah, I think they'll benefit from having a seasoned veteran, a 26-year-old guy. And then he turned out to be one of the biggest draft busts of all time for the Eagles. We just didn't know how many more there would be.
One of the biggest draft busts yet.
Yes.
There's still plenty to come. They will continue to screw up the draft.
Yes. Anyway, thank you for tuning in this week. Big thank you to Alex Odom for joining us this week. Again, stay tuned to the site. We'll have a lot more coverage for you as things pop up. Latest recruiting developments as we get closer to signing day on December 16th. And again, check out our basketball preview, our 5-part basketball preview, if you haven't checked that out already. Hopefully we'll have some semblance of a season here that might tip off on the 19th against New Jersey Institute of Technology, NJIT. And again, thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you guys next week.